Welcome to the English with Kirsty podcast from www.englishwithkirsty.com. Here I'll be sharing with you tips, information and other learning resources so that you can improve your business English.
Hi, everybody. So if you've just tuned in, you might be surprised that I am talking and not the real host of this podcast, Kirsty. She's here, as you can see. And this time we decided to do a bit of a joint venture. But the idea is for you guys to get to know her better. So she invited me to be a bit of an MC this time. And instead of me talking and talking, I'm just going to ask questions. So that's a new refreshing role for me. And we'll see why she had this idea. So what's the story?
Well, I knew you'd be good at it. So that's why I asked you, because I knew that if I wanted to do this, then you're the number one person I want to be asking the questions.
And I
thought that English with Kirsty has been going for 250 episodes now. So it's a chance for people to find out who I am, what we're doing here, but also it's a chance to swap things around a bit, because if this year has taught me anything, it's that it's good to do new things and to try new things. So we're doing this.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's it. This is English with Kirsty. Might not look like it, but it sure is. I guess then the idea is to give you guys an overview of who Kirsty is and what she does and all that stuff, because I suppose that in your podcast episodes, you usually feature somebody else, or you give people content, or you talk about a topic, and usually there's not much about you. So I guess this is the chance to see, to learn more about you. So I guess I would go back to when you started teaching English, I guess, when you quit your job in London, right? And because this is why is this relevant, because it's from this experience that I guess you decided to start a podcast. So before we talk about the idea of the podcast, I guess we can go back to the real event that really later motivated the whole podcast story, right? So what happened there? Why did you quit your job? Why did you decide to become a teacher?
I think part of me has always wanted to become a teacher, because when I was 5, I wanted to be a teacher. But then I decided that was a really bad idea, because I didn't want to work with children and I didn't want to work in a school. And there were a whole bunch of other reasons. And so I just abandoned the idea and did something else. But really, in 2012, I remember I was ill and I was in bed with the flu and just thinking, oh, I need to do something with my life. I guess I'd had too long on my own, but I wanted to change some things, because I wasn't enjoying the commute. My job was okay, but there were things about my job that I didn't enjoy. And I thought, what do I want? Because this isn't it. This is what I want. And I started actually making a list of, like, if you know, money was no object, what would you like to do? What do you enjoy doing? What are you good at doing? All these things. And I realized that I enjoyed something I was doing in my free time a lot more, which was I was very involved in language activities, language exchanges, helping people to learn. Some of them were helping me with the languages I was learning. And I thought, maybe, you know, people are learning, so maybe I could be a teacher. Maybe I could bring together my interest in languages with my interest in working with people, because at that time I was working in communications, but I didn't really have the kind of people focus that I wanted to have. So I thought maybe I could set something up. Originally it was going to be part-time, but in the end, as life happens, it wasn't. So I left my job in communications and set up English with Kirsty in 2012.
Mm-hmm. So how was it in the beginning? How did you get your first clients?
I look back and now I think that was brave, knowing what I know now. My first client, the first ever client, was somebody that I'd just been helpful on social media. I'd helped her, and she said, when she knew that I was setting up the business, and she said, when you do, I'll be your first client. So she was. And then the second person was the partner of somebody whom I'd worked with previously on another project that had nothing to do with language teaching. And then the third one was somebody I'd never met before, somebody who just found me online. So it was hard at the beginning. Some things are very different. At the beginning, I had a very, very broad focus. I will teach English to anyone online, probably good if you're a German speaker. But now I've, you know, with time, I've understood what I can do better, how I can add more value, and what kind of people are best suited to working with me. So, but at the beginning, it was very much, you know, there's so much information for people with their own businesses now, which is a good in some ways, not so good in others, because you don't know whom to trust. But when I started doing it, there was very little available, and that was one of the biggest mistakes I made, not linking up with other people in a similar position so that we could support each other and help each other, because for a couple of years I didn't do any of that, and it was all figure it out on your own.
So, but did you set up your, you know, your website, your profile on social media? What was the business? I mean, how did you present yourself to people?
It was a website. When I look at the website now with all the hundreds of podcast episodes and blog posts and other things, and it was a very basic website. I think it had 6 or 7 pages. And then I had Facebook, which I don't really use now, but I had a Facebook profile. I had LinkedIn. I had Xing, which is like LinkedIn, but in Germany. I guess I was using Twitter at some point, but not very much. So I had all these profiles, and I was trying to, you know, create content. At the beginning, it was more the blog. Now it's more the podcast, connecting with people, talking to people, and yeah, hoping to find clients.
So as the business grew, what else did you do? I mean, how did it happen? If you had your online presence, you knew a few people, but then what happened? What was the whole history the first, let's say, 3 years before the podcast?
It was trial and error. I was ridiculously busy because I was underpricing my services. So I got really stressed out. I was too busy. I couldn't accommodate all the people that wanted to work with me. And it's a great position to be in, because I'd given myself 9 months and I said, okay, if you can, it doesn't have to be like making loads of money, but you have to be able to, you know, earn enough in the first 9 months to know whether it's going to work, because otherwise you're going to have to go and get another job and do something else. So the first year was quite good in that respect. There was some a website that I was able to advertise on that isn't an option now, and so that helped me in the beginning, and that also taught me not to rely entirely on one way of getting clients, because if it disappears, then you have a problem. So that was going well, but I realized it wasn't sustainable what I was doing, because I couldn't like fit everybody in and earn enough at the same time. So I had to look at pricing, and then I had to look at what I wanted to do, because I was getting all kinds of inquiries about things that I didn't really know how to do or want to do. So it's like, okay, let's be a bit more specific about what you want to do and how you can best help people. So that the podcast then came about 3 years later, 2015. Yeah. Because everybody was talking about, you must do video, you have to do video, or you won't survive. And my rebellious nature also just said, no, I don't want to do video. So I'll find something else and prove that you're wrong. So I don't have a problem with video. I just enjoy making audio content more. And also, I'd been helped so much by podcasts as a language learner. My many hours of commuting into London, I learned a lot, and I thought, if they've helped me, I'm sure, you know, there's a big market for podcasts. There are people who listen to them, and I'm sure that they could be a way to reach other people. Originally, it was just single, like solo episodes, and very, very quite basic. But then I realized that I enjoy speaking with people as well. In fact, you helped me last year to really get back into the interviewing idea. To have interesting conversations and to move the focus of the podcast away, because there are lots of quite basic podcasts about, you know, how to learn English and grammar points and stuff like that. But I wanted to get into more involved conversations about language and what it means for us and using language at work and working across multiple languages and communication topics. So to get into those kind of topics, because they are the topics that are relevant for the people that I'm going to be working with.
So what about the very beginning of everything? Like when you don't know the ins and outs of the very hard job of recording and, you know, all that more, you know, brick and mortar new version, online version for creating a podcast, because it's not just talking into a microphone and everything happens by itself, right? So you have to set it up, you have to create the account, you have to do all of that. Right now, from my experience, obviously creating my podcast only a year and a half ago, everything was much easier, I suppose. But I can only imagine that 9 years ago, things were a little less easy, right? So I guess it was a little bit more complicated to get things going because there was not information, at least the same information, the same amount of information you have these days. So how did that happen? I mean, how did you think of the more logistic related parts of the podcast?
I think you grow with the tasks. Like originally I wasn't just using my phone. I had a gaming headset which had quite a good microphone, but it wasn't the professional microphone that I have now. And I went through various different options for recording interviews. Some were not so good. I remember losing the whole interview with one of them, having to do it again. And also, you know, getting feedback from listeners like, this is too quiet. I need you to make this louder. I took that on board. But I think the most important thing was not waiting for it to be perfect. It was just like, get something out that's a good enough quality and then build on that. And I think because if you worry too much, then you never get started. It's like, well, okay, I'm not so proud of episode one of the English with Kirsty podcast. It's still around on the internet, but it's very basic. But we move. If we don't start, then we don't learn, we don't develop, and we don't progress. So I guess once I decided to do it, I was like, right, I need to get something out there, and then I can learn as I go.
So did you like prepare a whole batch of 3 months worth of podcasts? Was it always like every week, or was it just once a month? How did you do it in the beginning? Did you prepare for the long run, or what was the story? Did you have like an idea that would last forever? Did you think it was going to last for many months? What was the story when you started? How well did you prepare?
I think I prepared in that I had ideas for, I don't know, 10 or something, maybe 15, so that I didn't start it and then run out of ideas and wish I hadn't started it. So I was planning for it to be a long-term project, but I didn't plan out loads of episodes in advance. And I think as I have continued with it, like the longer I go, the less planning I do. I have a list of stuff that I want to talk about and some people that I want to talk to. But previously, especially the guest episodes, they had their list of questions, and these are the questions I'm going to ask, and this is what we're going to do. But now it's, if you insist, I'll give you one or two questions. I do want to know why somebody's coming on the podcast. So we have to like agree on a reason for their being there, a topic. But past that, I prepare much less. And again, that's thanks to you, because I've seen what you do, and I've learned to be a lot less structured and go with the conversation, see where it goes. So I guess the more I do that, the less planning I do. With solo episodes, I have some notes, like bullet points, what I want to cover. But again, I think in the past I made much more comprehensive notes and worked with those, whereas now I just have a few points so I don't forget what I want to include and go with that.
So how long were you, a podcast hostess when you decided to actually invite the first guest? And who was this person? You never forget your first one, I suppose.
Oh, I guess I did. I wasn't prepared for that question. I don't know who it was. I don't know. I hadn't been going for very long. I guess during the pandemic, I kind of lost my way with the podcast a bit. I started doing other things. So I had a few guests, and then I had a time where I wasn't publishing the episodes as regularly, because originally it was every week without fail. And for the last year or so, it has been pretty much that as well. But there was a time in the middle where I kind of lost my way with ideas and who can I talk to. And so you'll see like a bigger gap, maybe 2017, 18, 19, like around that time. And then I don't remember who my first guest was. I always found it harder with guests because I don't know. I'd been doing a lot of solo episodes. And now it's gone the other way. I'm trying to get back to doing some more solo episodes, because all I've done is guest episodes, which are also really good. That's, fun. And it's actually easier now to have an interesting conversation. But I think looking at the stats, looking at what people have asked me, then the listeners do appreciate both. So I want to try and get a bit more balance back into that.
So what after that moment of being more quiet and doing less episodes, what gave you the mojo to actually go back to the podcast and make it, more visible, more fluent, renewed, all sorts of
Last year, it
things?
was you, to be honest, because you got all this energy from
Jesus.
starting your new project and you were so like enthusiastic about being a podcaster and it's great. And I was like, yeah, actually, it is great. And I've got to know a lot of new people recently through being more active on LinkedIn and being more involved in like the language community and meeting a lot of people that way. So I don't know, some of your enthusiasm rocked onto me and I thought, yeah, this is,
Wow.
we have got
I
something
wasn't
good here.
expecting that to be the thing, right?
That's what happens when you don't plan the questions. You find out things you didn't expect.
Well, exactly. So this is like the rules that I have for my podcast. I asked Kirsty if I could apply them to hers, and this is why it's, as I always say, unprepared, unscripted, uncut, right? So therefore unpredictable. This is what you get for inviting me, you know. So then in the new wave of podcasting, then you remember, I'm sure, who was the first guest. So that was probably about a year and a half ago or so, right?
I really don't know because I yeah, there's been
Is
loads.
obviously the wrong
It's the
question
wrong
to ask.
question because I didn't really stop. I guess I was just having it more kind of sporadically, and people come, and then I would do a few on my own. So it wasn't like a proper break. It was just that I guess I wasn't as inspired. I just didn't have the ideas, and then they started coming as I guess I started talking to people more, creating more consistent content. I guess I moved onto LinkedIn away from other platforms like Facebook, and then found that the conversations that I was interested in were happening on LinkedIn, and that then gave me the inspiration to look at some things from my daily life with my customers and what people are talking about on LinkedIn. And then through the new context that I had, then that gave me new ideas for the new people to come on the podcast. And you have been back how many times now? Three?
I don't know. This time it doesn't count. But, I guess quite a few times. But the truth is that I know that in this year and a half, we have been friends, and you have actually been a lot more interested than before, as far as I know, in whatever goes on in the translators department and community. So you kind of are getting now to a point where you're in a bit of a hybrid position, because I know that you have brand new courses and programs that cater more towards specific publics. So I guess that would be interesting to talk about because it's happening right now, right? So what happened? I know we started our networking events for language professionals, and that's how you got to meet a lot of people, and I guess that inspired you a little bit. And so I guess that because I have been looking at what you have been doing lately, and it's quite different from what it was when we first met. Right?
Yeah, I
So,
was
what
looking
has
at some of
inspired
those
all
old
these
posts.
changes?
I think it's really realizing what I want to do because, you know, there's a lot of people teaching English in the world. And whilst I can do a lot of things, I really enjoy doing some things more than other things. So I started to think about what I'm enjoying. And I noticed through the events that we're running and through things that I've been reading on LinkedIn that, for example, with translators who work with text, obviously, because that's their job. There were a number of people who were saying that they had really good English skills, but they didn't have opportunities to speak. And as such, if they were asked to do a presentation or to go to a networking event or to go to a conference, that they didn't feel as confident using English when they were speaking as they would if they were reading or writing it. And I thought that that would be a real opportunity to bring some people together then in the same position so that they can support one another but also learn. So that's where the idea for the Speaking Skills for Freelance Translators course was born. That was the first of the new programs, which started at the beginning of this year. So two groups have been through the program already, and a third is being planned for September 2024, or third or more, because if we get a lot of people, then we'll need more than one group. So that's really for people who are translators, because I think it's good to bring people together in a similar situation. So the language pairs might be different, the type of translation might be different, but many of the topics are the same for people working as freelance translators. And it's nice for them, I think, sometimes, because a lot of other business English courses are, parts of them are completely irrelevant because they're for people in companies. And if you're a freelancer, you're not in a company. So and obviously a lot of the work related topics are going to be less relevant. So the course is for people in groups of three or four to come together and practice their speaking skills as an opportunity to present. We talk about social media, their presence, if they want to have any kind of social media presence in English, networking, meeting with others, creating content, working with clients. So a lot of different topics are covered there, and it's a way to give them the opportunity to have feedback about their English and to learn, but also to be working with people in a similar situation. So that's the first one.
Mm-hmm. I can see the trend. Yeah, I can see the trend of you kind of gravitating towards having people coming together and speaking and practicing, almost as opposed to having, you know, session, one-on-one sessions with you or all of that. So I suppose that's something that you're going to bring into the future, because you have a lot of other initiatives that go into that same idea, right? So we have to talk about them because they're the ones you have been doing for a long time.
Yeah, I mean, the Conversation Club is that, it kind of feeds into that. The Conversation Club is a club, not a course. So it's not a language course. If someone's stuck for a word, I'm going to help them. I'm not going to let them struggle, but it's not about correcting people and how to do it better, because that is a course and this is a club. So the Conversation Club has two groups. One is for freelancers and business owners, and the other one is for general English. So that's about coming together once a month. We have a topic, maybe presented by one of the members, maybe presented by me or an external guest. And then I facilitate a discussion around that topic. So it's an opportunity to learn, to share experiences, and to speak English in a more relaxed way, but with people who want to talk about the same kinds of things. So for the freelancer group and business owners, we're talking about having your own business. So it's work related, but it's not with your potential clients. So yeah, I have a good mix of group and one-to-one stuff still, because some of the other things, like the new language mentoring program, is one-to-one, because it's about an individual's journey with English. You know, what's stopping people, what are the challenges, how can we get past them. So the mentoring program is called Discover Your Voice in English, and it's for business owners or freelancers who want to use English at work, but, you know, who are finding it difficult to really be themselves, because I've experience that as well. It takes a while in another language before you can really be yourself. You know, you can know things about a language, but until you really communicate your personality, who you are, how you want to show up in the world, that takes some time. And sometimes the things that prevent us from doing that are nothing to do with language skills, that they're about us and how we feel about ourselves or how we do things. So that the course is, that's why I don't really want to call it a course. It's more of a mentoring program, because I'm helping you or working with you to address some of those challenges and to find maybe better or kinder ways of doing things, and at the same time to improve your English. And then the last one is not official yet, because it's not, the web page isn't finished, but if we're talking about new things, then the last one is going to be a language consultancy service for trainers and coaches and training providers who have some kind of course or program in another language that isn't English, and their plan is to then make it available to an English-speaking audience as well. So something that's already working well, something where you're sharing your knowledge, it could be a webinar, training course, and it's getting you to the point where you're ready to deliver that in English. So it's not a translation service. I know plenty of people who can do that. I'm not one of them, but it's about preparing you to be able to do that, all the work that needs to be done before, during, and after a course, and making sure that you feel empowered to go and do that in English.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So what's in the works for the podcast? I mean, from now until the near future, since there's all sorts of things going on. And I'm sure that whatever you do at work influences the podcast, whatever you do in the podcast influences work, right? That's the way it goes, because podcasts just become very personal, I guess, the way I see it, obviously. So yeah. How does one influence the other?
I think I tend to be more aware of people who are talking about similar topics to me. So we've had a series of like 3 or 4 episodes about voice, because, you know, discover your voice in English. And so I've had a voice coach as well, who does something very different to me. I'm not a voice coach, but some of the topics that we talked about were relevant to this topic. And then I've just had someone talking about brand voice, and then giving people an exercise to do about their voice. So I guess we may have more seasons. I hadn't really thought about this until you asked the question, but I can see it moving into more seasons of maybe 5 or 6, not seasons like a podcast, but topics, like groups of episodes about a certain topic, and then move on to another group of episodes about another topic. I think that would be a good thing to do, as we, because I am very aware that there are different people groups listening to the podcast. And so I want to make sure that one group of episodes doesn't go on too long if it's not relevant to someone. But I think I've got lots of ideas for people that I want to bring in, and focusing a lot more on our message, how we show up, and being real, because there's so many people maybe on LinkedIn or on other parts of the internet telling us how we should be speaking, how we should show up. Some people like outsourcing everything to AI to be generated, which is very difficult to do that in a way that's convincing and sounds like you, especially if you're the face of your brand. And I think it's important to look at how we want others to hear us, because there isn't like a right way, but there is a right or a wrong way that feels good for us or doesn't. And there is a way that reflects who we are or doesn't. And for all of us, it's about finding how to do that in a way that feels authentic.
Mm-hmm. Speaking about public, you just talked about the groups of people listen to the podcast. Who are these people? What kind of people do you think, groups of people, listen to English with Kirsty? What do you think? And have they evolved over the years? Or do you think it's the same type of people, or the same person, as they say, that is tuning in to hear what you have to say?
I think I'd like to know more about this. If you're listening to this, send me a message, podcast@englishwithkirsty.com, so that I can find out more about you, because I can see the statistics about, you know, that it's in a number of countries, mainly across Europe, but also beyond. From the feedback I've got, I know that it's professionals who are interested in learning English. I know about the places, you know, I go dog walking with people, and so people who are, a lot of people who are self-employed, but I think that's more recent, because that's the kind of circles that I've been moving in more, connecting with more people who are self-employed or freelancers or small business owners. So I think that reflects in how the listener demographics are changing a bit. I don't offer a lot of stuff about, you know, studying, exams, how to learn English. So most of the people who are listening to the podcast, I think, already have a good level of English, because I don't speak extra slowly. I don't offer worksheets about words or things like that. It's normal conversations. And that was intentional, because when I used podcasts for language learning, unless it was right at the very beginning, I looked for content for speakers of English, because that's how people talk in real life. So I think that's what my listeners are doing too. So, and I think we have some English speakers, first language speakers, listening as well, because they want to learn other languages. And some of the things that we talk about are relevant if you're learning to speak another language as well.
Mm-hmm. So how do you balance, and I ask myself this question a lot, how do you balance what you think the people who are tuning in want to hear and what you want to bring to the project? Because this is something I ask myself all the time, because obviously I'm also, you know, managing who I'm going to, you know, to invite and what kind of topics, what kind of things. And for me now, obviously, as you know, and it's the same for you, some people actually offer to be in the podcast. We get to a point where this starts happening. And I've had quite a few cases like that recently. And I know that you go through a process of getting to know the person first and doing all that, which I usually don't. I just go for it. I get to know the person online as we start recording. So that's how I do it. But that's just my style. But how do you balance what you want to bring to the audience with what you think the vast majority of the people who tunes in wants to hear?
You can't please everybody. I know that. I think part of this balance is also about how do you put the content that you're creating in the places where the people who want it will find it as well. So that's almost a harder thing for me. Like I have to keep thinking, okay, how do I find the people that really want to hear this content? Because I think if you're creating content that you don't enjoy, like if I were to create some of the more traditional, this is how you learn English podcast kind of content, I wouldn't enjoy that. So I think you have to be true to yourself in a way and create content that reflects you and what you're doing and what you want to create. But at the same time, if nobody liked it, nobody listened, that wouldn't be good either. So I think it's good to be aware of where you want to go in a more general sense with the podcast. Like I do vet fit people. And if somebody comes on the podcast, I want to know what kind of value they're bringing, what kind of conversation we're going to have that will be useful for the listeners, because it's not just a promotional opportunity for someone else. I want to make sure that the listeners get a value from that, because it's going out in my name. It's got my English with Kirsty brand on it. I want to have something that I can feel proud of. So I have ideas about where I want to go with the podcast, but I'm also open to surprises. Like sometimes you just have to be open to a new idea. If I can see how it fits, I will go with it. And I do ask, what kind of things people want to hear. Maybe I should do another poll on LinkedIn. Maybe it's time for that, because I haven't done it for a while. But I do ask either on the podcast or on social media, like, what do you enjoy most? What do you want to see more of? And so that can help. I think I had a survey a couple of years ago as well. And that can help in making the decisions about what you want to do next with the podcast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's quite complicated, that part, because it's like sometimes I feel like I really philosophically deeply believe that certain topic or someone should be on the podcast, and I just do it. I know I run my risks of not having anyone tuning in for that week. I guess it's worth the risk if you believe that it's something that is valuable for anyone who is listening. So I would
listen to, you know, yeah, like generally I would listen to things that I hadn't thought about, like for yours, because I regularly listen to yours. Then I would listen, even if it was a topic that I don't know anything about this, I wouldn't have looked for something on this. But so I think you have your core listener base who will come with you. But yeah, it's also
like
about
the Sanskrit teachers, right?
Yeah, no, in Portuguese. Because you can learn something new. It's good to learn something new. But you never know when people will come back to that. And I think that's what we can forget as content creators, maybe not on the platforms where things move so fast that they disappear, but a podcast, I do see my stats, and I do see that sometimes people go further back in the list of podcast episodes to ones that I haven't completely forgotten, but, you know, like I hadn't thought of them for a while, and said, oh, people are listening to that. Well, that's cool. So I think, you know, sometimes you put something out and you think it's going to be really popular, and then it isn't. But then those things can,
for sure,
can get listens later on after a few weeks or even months. It's kind of surprising. You can't predict.
Mm-hmm. That's true. I'm with you. It's like you can't predict. And maybe that's what's good about it, right? The fact that at least people who do things like us, right, or like me and now you a little bit, which is like a little bit of work on the spot and work with what we have and work with the ideas that, you know, are working in another part of our lives at the same time and all of that stuff. I guess that's how it goes. You're just open to all sorts of new things and new possibilities. And then sometimes it's very good. Sometimes you just, you know, it's a week where people actually aren't interested in the content, but you still have it there because you believe in it. So I guess that's the most important thing, is for you to believe in whatever you put out there. So before we go, can we have like a final statement on the podcast, English with Kirsty? So if nobody has ever tuned in before, why should they tune in?
Because you get to find out interesting and useful tips about language learning. You get to hear stories of other people and the role that language is playing in their lives and how they negotiate some of the challenges of working across different languages and some of their stories. And you get to hear implementable strategies and ideas that can make your life easier while you're working with English as an additional language.
Well, I like that. I know it wasn't prepared, so
Nothing today
sorry
was
about the
prepared.
surprise. But
That's
yes, of course, that's how it works. I mean, we had it scheduled. That's enough, right?
what.
And we showed up. That's us. Okay, thank you so much, Kirsty. It's like we have talked to each other online many times, sometimes live with our networking events, sometimes on the podcast, yours or mine. So I'm sure people will see us together in future adventures. But for now, this is what we have for you. So thank you very much for tuning in. And if you haven't really discovered more about Kirsty, I really advise you to do it because she has a lot to offer to the world. And she's one of the most amazing people I met online, especially in the language space. So that's what I have to say. Thank you so much.
Thank you so.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of the English with Kirsty podcast. If you have any questions or comments, my email address is kirsty@englishwithkirsty.com, or you can go to www.englishwithkirsty.com/podcast, where you'll find information about the individual episodes.